Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Today kicks off a new regular segment for Radio Boston. We're calling it Writers on Writers. We'll talk with writers not about their own work, but about other writers whose work they admire. And this summer we'll be focusing on books that help us understand race in America. Today, we wanted to start by looking through the lens of children's books. Joining me now is Jabari Asim. He's a writer, a professor of writing and publishing at Emerson College, and he's also written several books and poems about the Black experience in America. His most recent book, which came out just last week, is called Stop and Frisk, American Poems. He's also the author of 9 children's books and a fan of many more. Jabari, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So I will get into some specific choices you've made for us in just a moment, but I want to start by asking you about kind of this current moment we're in. We've seen sustained protests and demonstrations over the last few weeks. It seems like we're having serious conversations about police reform. It feels like it's at least possibly a historic moment, the way we're talking about race and racism. So how do we help our kids understand where we're at, and how can books help us do that?
Well, you know, books help us look at the narrative from sort of the beginning, particularly the African-American experience in this instant, up to the present. And, you know, there's this cliche that if we don't know our history, we are doomed to repeat it. So even as we understand the present, we can look at these other narratives that have described other periods that have been, you know, similar in particular ways and different in other ways, but help us develop some kind of critical understanding of what's happening now, and, you know, perhaps shape our optimism or our viewpoint in terms of what can happen next.
So let's look at some specific examples you've picked out for us. First pick I want to highlight is All Us Come Across the Water by Lucille Clifton. Can you tell us a little bit about this book and why you chose it?
Yes, All Us Come Across the Water by the great Lucille Clifton, with illustrations by the great John Steptoe. So we have a combination of really powerful talents. And Lucille Clifton today is best known as a brilliant poet, and it's perhaps not known even to some of her admirers that she wrote a number of children's books in the 1970s. And All Us Come Across the Water came out in 1973. It's about a little Black boy who is struggling with how best to describe his heritage when the teacher asks each student in class to share a story about where their ancestors come from. And so he talked with people in his community, including relatives and elders, in an attempt to sort of pin down exactly where in Africa his people came from. And ultimately he decides that some information is more critical than the details, such as the reality of his people's togetherness and their ability to thrive against, you know, very unfavorable odds. It's a beautiful book.
That's a powerful message. I know you've got an excerpt chosen from the book. Can you read that for us?
Sure. When they stole my daddy's daddy to make him a slave, they didn't ask for his name and he didn't give it. Well, what did they call him? He say, whatever he let him. Reckon he figure if they ain't got his name, they ain't really got him. I say, Big Mama give me my name. It mean unity. He smiled then. He start really talking. Long as your own give you the name, you know it's yours. We name us. Everybody else just calling us something, but we name us.
There's such a big, complex issue there about identity and where we come from. And I'm just kind of wondering, these are talking about really serious themes, racial trauma, violence, some of the most troubling parts of our country's history directly in children's books. Are there extra obstacles in doing that? And why are the All Us Come Across the Water and some of the others that you've chosen, why are they effective in doing that?
Yeah, actually, All Us Come Across the Water is probably the most subtle of the books that I've chosen. They do talk about people being stolen and that sort of thing. But the others that we'll talk about are perhaps even more direct. And, you know, Chris, it really is a fine line. I mean, you want to inform young readers, but you don't want to traumatize them to the extent that they're actually turned off by the idea of reading stories and reading history. And, these authors that we're looking at today walk that fine line with considerable skill. at the same time, you know, I believe you should defer to the parents. Some parents will feel that this material is too sensitive for their children to be getting at a young age. And I feel bound to respect that. But there are many of us who are parents and writers and readers who actually want to begin to introduce this kind of material into our children's knowledge base fairly early in their development. And these are the kinds of books that will ideally help us do that.
You mentioned some of your other choices are a little more direct. I want to turn to one of those. Let's talk a little bit about Pink and Say, which is another book that you chose. I read that this morning. Wow.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Patricia Polacco wrote it and illustrated it. And, you know, I can say as a writer, I find this book particularly instructive because she really shows how you can tell this kind of story without, soft pedaling it and at the same time not making it so horrible that the child's going to run, you know, throw the book across the room and run screaming away from it. So it tells a moving story of the friendship of two Union soldiers, two very young Union soldiers. They're boys, actually, one black and one white during the Civil War. And their alliance begins on a Georgia battlefield when one saves the life of the other. Polacco upends a number of stereotypes as her story progresses, and she doesn't force a happy ending on us. In fact, the tale of Pink and Say winds up at Andersonville, the notorious Confederate prison. But like some of these other authors that we're looking at today, she sort of successfully advances an argument that shielding young readers from the facts of history does them no favors.
Yeah, you mentioned the ending. We don't have to give specifics in case folks want
to
check it out
no
for
spoilers.
Themselves. But yeah, exactly. But man, a real gut punch at the end.
Yes.
And there are so many issues in there. You mentioned this during the Civil War. These are folks who are talking about whether they can return to the battlefield or fear of death. I mean, these are heavy, heavy issues for kids. Again, I guess I'm just wondering, what would you say to parents who would say, I don't think really that's appropriate for children's literature?
Well, you know, it's, you know, I'm not a guy who shies away from an argument, but that's not an argument I would necessarily have. I really think you have to respect parents and their instincts. They know their children, right? And I think I would defer if a parent said to me, look, I read this book. It is a terrific book, you're right, but I don't think my child is ready for it. Then I would say, well, you know, put it on the shelf, get it out from time to time, and when you feel the time is right, share it with your child. But there are some of us, like I say, who have fewer reservations, and I think, you know, the book works for us, as challenging as it is.
Yeah, I know you've got a reading selected from this one as well. Do you want to share that with us?
Sure. What was your outfit again? Pink asked. He'd asked me before. Ohio 24th, I carried the staff. Wasn't supposed to carry a gun, but then so many died, even us boys had to carry, after so many were slaughtered like hogs. At least you got to carry. In the 48th, we couldn't have guns at first. We fought with sticks and hammers and sledges. Can you imagine not trusting us with our own fight? I couldn't imagine such a thing. Then when they did finally give us muskets, they were from the Mexican-American War. Those muskets jammed and misfired. Then how in God's name can you want to go back? I asked. Because it's my fight, Say. Ain't it yours too? If we don't fight, then who will? So there, you're right. They are dealing with some very heavy, some heavy questions there.
Well, and you mentioned kind of turning the expectations of the characters on its head. That's the black soldier saying it's, we've got to go back.
Yes.
Can you talk about kind of the power of flipping the stereotype there?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, in some school districts around the country, they still have been teaching a very problematic view of the Civil War. They don't even acknowledge that the war was fought over slavery. And Polacco just kind of smashes those arguments with these two characters of Pink and Say, of this young black boy who really wants to fight for his freedom. And he knows what the war's about. It's our fight, he says. It's our war. And I think by putting that in the mouths of characters rather than just have the narration tell us that, Polacco is doing a really good job of defending the truth of the Civil War. And also the other stereotype in the book is that the black boy can read and the white boy cannot. And she does a lot with the power of literacy in this context, and that's really valuable too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that story is an incredibly powerful one. I highly recommend it for anybody who sounds interested in this as we're talking about it. I want to move to another choice. This is a work of historical fiction. My name is Madison Hemmings. Tell us about this one and why it made your list.
Sure. My name is James Madison Hemmings. The title character is the son of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemmings, who most of us know was enslaved by Jefferson. She had six of his children. She was Black and a teenager. He was white, wealthy, and middle-aged. She was, of course, in no position to consent to a relationship. Now, can all of this somehow be dealt with in a picture book for children? Yes. And I think the author, Jonah Winter, proves it. His young protagonist asks the same questions that we might, such as, how could a father enslave his own flesh and blood? And that's a really powerful, painful, serious question. But as young Madison ponders these difficulties, Widener's illustrations give us only portions of Jefferson. Like his children by Hemmings, readers never get access to the complete man. And it's a very somber, bittersweet at best picture book.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about that, about just getting kind of glimpses but not a picture of the whole man?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the boy wants, right? He wants to understand his father and all his complexity. And as he struggles to piece together his father, we as readers are put in a similar position because we see the back of his neck, we might see his hair, we might see his shoulder. We're seeing him as young Madison sees him, which is never... never directly, never face to face. And this is just the boy's attempt to get an understanding of his father. Something like an embrace, an actual touch, is clearly out of the question. And young Madison is he's sad as a result of this. You know, there is no joyful ending for him. He never gets to know his father. But this is painful history. But I think it's rendered in a way that a young child can understand.
There's one other from your list that we're not going to have time to get into, To Be a Slave, sure, by Julius Lester, which you say is for older children. I want to ask you, your list was kind of a mix of Black authors and white authors. I think some folks out there, maybe white parents, are wondering, are there different books that my kids should be reading? Versus, how do you kind of think about the audience's race as we're thinking about the books that are most instructive?
Well, sure. I mean, when I think about it as a parent who encouraged reading among my own children, you know, as an African-American parent, probably 98% of the books that our children are being exposed to were not written by African-Americans. And yet somehow we've managed to appreciate and intellectually engage with those stories. And so I don't think it would be much of a hardship for white parents and parents of other backgrounds to engage in stories that deal with characters of color that were written by authors of color. I don't think anyone owns the narrative. I don't think one particular type of author can share this narrative better than others. I think that many different kinds of authors are telling these stories well, and we as readers are fortunate to be able to sample them as we choose.
Do you think that white kids need to read more of these types of stories, since it's not as they're not living it every day?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I alluded to this earlier. Not only are they not living it every day, but school districts across the country are often doing a willfully poor job in sharing these experiences. And so parents do have an opportunity to supplement what their children are getting or not getting, white parents specifically, by supporting stories like these, bringing them home, and making them a part of their household.
That's Jabari Asim. He's a writer, professor of writing and publishing at Emerson College, and he's also written several books and poems about the Black experience in America. His most recent book, which came out just last week, is called Stop and Frisk, American Poems. Jabari, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Chris. My pleasure.